Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 140, Logic Apps, and we have our special guest this week is Kevin Lamb from the Logic Apps team. My name is Evan Basilek, and as you, for our regular listeners, you may notice that it's not Sujit doing the intro. He is on vacation this week, and Kale is running late, so he may join us later. If not, it'll just be me solo. So, without further ado, we'll go ahead and get into everything. Couple announcements this week. One of them is, this is really about making it easier for people to use the platform. So we've got, some new capabilities with mobile apps where the quick start is much simpler for people to go through, right? If you've ever used mobile apps in the past, it's a little bit non-trivial to get one up and running. Now we're kind of shooting to make that much quicker and easier. I mean, still can extend it right to your own, but at least you get up and going faster and get a sense for what the service can do. Also, and this is, we've talked about this on the show before. Linux is now something that we really care about on the Microsoft side. This is not in the old days where Linux was bad, and we are continuing to kind of grow both the support for the Linux platform in general and the Linux distros that we do run, but on top of that also making sure that the services that we provide also are more supportive for Linux. So this week Site Recovery now has added Red Hat Linux 7.1 and 7.2, a couple new versions of CentOS, right? And so we're just continuing to extend this. We also have added the support for migration from AWS Linux VMs to Azure, and really again just trying to make it so that whatever you run, be it Windows, be it Linux, you can take advantage of the Azure services. So with that, I think at this point we'll kind of let Kevin introduce himself. He's here as our special guest from the Logic Apps team. Kevin, can you just kind of maybe give us a brief overview of who you are and what you do?
Certainly. Hi, my name is Kevin Lamb. I'm a principal program manager, primarily focused on Logic Apps. I'm on a team that's called Microsoft Integration that includes other services like API management, scheduler, BizTalk server, and host integration server, where we are really focusing on integration. I've been at Microsoft for about 19 years, mostly in this enterprise space, anywhere from doing solution architecture work to dev on OS to being working on these various products throughout my career.
Great. Yeah, so it's always nice to hear BizTalk, right? I have very fond memories of BizTalk, but not many people these days. I guess it's still in use, but I don't see a whole lot of people doing new things on it.
It's surprisingly, there's a lot more usage than you think.
Really?
It's not a deprecating product. It's there are more and more people using it. As a matter of fact, I think in the European Union, they made a recent requirement that for doing some AS4 type of workloads, for B2B workloads, mm-hmm. they're going to require some BizTalk installations.
Wow.
So we are seeing BizTalk being used around the world.
Now, is this is the on-premises, or this is the BizTalk service?
BizTalk on-premises, yeah.
Okay.
Even though that's not the topic of this call, yes, it's still an active server, and we are continuing to have releases for it.
Okay, awesome. No, that's great to hear. I don't get to hang out in that space anymore, but I do remember dealing with it in the past. By the way, folks, it looks like Kale has been able to join us. Welcome, Kale.
Certainly.
Yeah, So Kevin, I'm a developer, or I'm kind of an ex-developer. I was in developer support for a long time before I moved to Azure. And, help me understand kind of where Logic Apps fits into that picture there, right? Because I'm not writing code, right? So it seems like it spans both the developer and non-developer scenarios.
Yeah, so you want to think of Logic Apps as your hosted business process in the cloud. And when you think about rapid application development, it really is a quick way to be able to integrate various services and protocols up in the cloud. Where normally you'd have to worry about a lot of the minutiae about retries and the semantics about a particular API, yep. We take away a lot of that work for you.
Okay. So is this kind of like an enterprise version of IFTTT at that point? If then this that, or I'm sorry, if then.
Yeah, I mean, IFTTT is if this and that is a really simplified way of looking at it, because it can only do based on some event, it can
right.
do a particular thing. What we want to think about for Logic Apps is that it's your kind of integration hub in the cloud. And with the digital transformation, everybody's making. Departments are making decisions about where they put their data mm-hmm. and how they access that. So it's no longer in the control of the IT department where you're dealing with more classic line of business systems. And so that data is going into Salesforce or Dropbox or Box or SharePoint Online, Twitter. And so you have your social media things as well, Facebook and your protocols with FTP and SFTP and HTTP. So, trying to work in that world of this digital transformation and trying to reach into all these disparate services that don't communicate in the same way, they don't have the same message formats for being able to interact with those. And
right.
that's where we come in and play a big part in making that integration a lot easier.
So this is kind of where the fact that it sounds like your team kind of is rooted in the BizTalk space, this is kind of where that comes in, because that was, again, something that BizTalk was or is really good at, is those kinds of integrations.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right. BizTalk server is our on-premises kind of integration story for doing on-premises messaging, interactions, and orchestrations across those things. And now as we think about this explosion up in the cloud, Logic Apps is kind of taking that place in a sense for doing this more modernized cloud-based interaction. Logic Apps is an IPaaS, so your infrastructure, your platform as a service. So then you don't have to worry about all the typical hosting things if you had your own infrastructure. So you don't have to worry about scalability or manageability or those things that you have to worry about with knobs and infrastructure and pay up front, because you only pay for what you use. So.
Okay, so back up a sec. So you said IPaaS. That's a new one.
IPaaS.
So is that
IPaaS is integration platform as a service. So if you go up to Gartner, Gartner has their magic quadrant
yep.
for how they rate certain companies for how they manage IPaaS. And IPaaS is about PaaS, which is the platform as a service,
right.
which means where you have infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And PaaS is essentially being able to host your workloads up in the cloud, so then you don't have to worry about those infrastructure needs. And IPaaS is very particular around the integration aspect.
Of
those scenarios.
Okay. No, it makes sense.
Hey, Kevin, one thing you mentioned there was when you were talking through that, you mentioned a lot of kind of external facing services like Box and Salesforce and these kind of things where we're reaching outside of an enterprise. My question is there any way to kind of rein this in? So when we did the app service model, being able to wrap that in a VNet, is that possible with Logic Apps, or this is only something where we have a public endpoint kind of, or we reach out to public services?
Well, Logic Apps is a PaaS offering up in the cloud, but we do have what's called an on-premises data gateway that allows you to do hybrid interactions with your line of business systems on-premises. So I can have a SQL Server on-prem and have my data gateway be that bridge across that VNet so I can communicate to those components.
I see. And the other question I had is, you mentioned scalability. So from this sense, we basically set up a workflow, and then we can't really kind of make it go faster. Is there different tiers of service or any of that, or do we have to fix with any of that, or do we just basically design our workflow and kind of figure out how we're going to kind of kick that off, and there is nothing around like different tiers of service, like a gold tier or a premium kind of tier?
That's a great question. When we went GA last month, we released a consumption meter, which means you pay for what you use and you don't get throttled. Previously, before we were GA, when we were in preview mode, we were requiring an app service plan. And then based on that app service plan, we did throttle you if you were a standard or premium. But now we don't require that anymore. You're pure consumption. So you can, as fast as you want to go, we will run it as fast as you have it come. So it's more of, for example, if I have messages in a service bus queue. If you have 500 messages, we'll read those messages and try to parallelize that as much as possible, and it'll just run. You don't have to worry about those types of knobs.
Oh, that's cool.
So what is the consumption unit in the context of logic apps? Like you look at storage is, you know, a storage block, and compute is cores. What's the kind of what do I count to try and have a sense?
Yeah, so
of
the
what
meter.
Cost is?
Yeah, the meter is what we call action executions. So an action execution is anything that our engine has to do to do work, essentially, right? So if you have every logic app has at least one trigger, which is the thing that determines how to create a new instance of a logic app, and then a number of actions that it can take. So, you know, as that trigger is looking for work and getting work, that's an action execution, and each step in that logic app that you've defined is then another action execution step. So as you go through each of those steps, those are action executions.
Okay, so within that action step, is there, I mean, I can do as much work as I want in that action step, then, right?
That's right. So if you have, a more complex scenario is that if you get an array of items from SQL, for example, and then you do a for each over that array, and each yep. in that for each you're doing an action call, which is going to, you know, post each item to a queue, mm-hmm. then each of those action executions is a metered count for that.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, this stuff sounds really cool. The one question I did have was around how does this kind of complement, or where does it fit when you start talking about things like the data factory, specifically around like doing translations. So if I read data in a certain format and then I want to do something with it, like maybe convert it to a different format and then put it somewhere else, does logic apps do that? And is that something where, like, they would work together with, like, because it seems like Data Factory does something similar with that, too.
Yeah, so if you think of you know, for those familiar with BizTalk, or kind of a classic integration product, it had receive and send pipelines that can do things that were called VETTR. So validate, extract, transform, and route. And so that's your typical transformation model. So then you can take a message. You can, you know, validate it that it's a valid message in the format that you care about. You can go ahead, and if it's an XML-based message, you can do an XPath query into that to that object. If it's JSON, you can do a direct JSON JObject reference to the property. Then you can do a transform, and a transform, again, if you're on the XML path, you can use an XSLT, and we provide tools to do the map. So the same tools that we provide in BizTalk Server, we also now provide in logic apps. You can do a full-fledged map of that XML transform, and then route. And route is, you know, since we essentially connect to anything, then you just call anything and send to it. So we do that kind of data manipulation, and there's a lot of scenarios in customers who they take an incoming data, transform it into some canonical model or the format that the endpoint cares about, and then sends it to that endpoint.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of all this code that I've written over the years that does nothing but reformat data, and now I'm wishing this existed back then.
What about on the authoring side, Kevin? Can you speak to that a bit? Like, we mentioned, like, you know, there's not a lot of code to write here, but is this something we do totally in a browser, in the portal? Does this have extensions into, like, something like Visual Studio? What's the authoring experience like?
So we offer a couple of authoring experiences. We are an Azure service, so we are in the Azure portal. So you can go to the portal, create a logic app, and actually design it within the portal. But we are also in Visual Studio. So you can go to Visual Studio, create a cloud project, and that cloud project is really a resource group project that allows you to create an ARM deployment template. And in that ARM deployment template, we recognize that there's a logic app. You can essentially right click on that logic app, on that deployment template, and says open with designer, and we will open the logic app's designer, and you can now design in Visual Studio. But the great thing about that is that you're now persisting to your local file store, so then you can have source control and CI/CD for those logic apps and deploy directly from your source control system.
It's just an ARM template at the end of the day underneath
that's right.
The covers, right?
We have a serialized form in JSON for the definition of your logic app. and then it just gets saved as part of your deployment.
Well, that's really cool, like for enterprise, right? So if somebody did design like a really cool kind of solution, they can version it and everything with their ARM template.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's cool. What about the connector model? Like, I mean, there's tons of connectors you guys have built in the platform for like you mentioned, like Dropbox, GitHub, a bunch of different things out there. Is that, how extensible is that beyond just, I mean, there's like HTTP requests and response, which are relatively generic, but could I build my own connector? Is there extensibility points for that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a bit of a nuanced answer here. We have a bunch of what we call built-in or managed connectors, so that we give a great first-class experience for connecting to, I think we have about 40 or so connectors now, but we're planning for hundreds coming up in the next few months. So, you know, you should look out, if you're a Logic Apps user, come back every so often, every few weeks, and you'll see more connectors just appearing up in that backlog. But we have a couple other ways to connect to things that we don't support yet, or is a very particular system that you may care about. One of the ways is that the way the engine works is that we're based on interpreting Swagger for interpreting that API. So if you can bring your own Swagger for a particular API endpoint, then you can get that first-class experience in our designer so that you get these nice property boxes and tokens, and you can drag and drop items around in our designer based on that. So HTTP plus Swagger gives you that kind of free designer experience. So then that API can be anything you want. The API can be an existing REST service that you already have, or you can create an API app and have that hosted in as a web app or API app, and then we can just call that, and then it looks like a first-class entity.
Wow, that's cool. Pretty cool. So I mean, literally can do anything on there as long as it honors the standards, the Swagger standards, right, from a publication perspective.
That's right. So if you expose Swagger, then we can consume that as a first-class entity. So if you have some random REST API out there and you want to Swaggerify it, then you can go ahead, and there's a bunch of tools like Swashbuckle, et cetera, that's out there that you can help you get that Swagger ready for you. And if you're creating a web app or an API app, you know, those guys are our buddies. So we actually, if you have one of those in your subscription, we already auto-discover those and recognize that as a first-class entity. So as long as you have on what's called an API app definition property on your API app, and you put your Swagger into that API definition, app definition, then we will automatically recognize it as a first-class card.
And wow, that's cool. Can I do auth with this as well, right? Because there are not all API apps are, you know, wide open.
Yes. So whatever auth API app supports, we support.
Okay. And can I, like, you know, having written some OAuth code, you know, in the past, I mean, that can be non-trivial sometimes. Like, does Logic Apps provide kind of an easy way to plug that in, so I'm not having to kind of really get in the down and dirty of trying to manage the OAuth tokens and the like?
Well, if you're using an API app or web app, they do have built-in, I think they call it EasyAuth, mm-hmm. so that you can add OAuth to your API app.
Right, but I'm saying as far as when I call it with Logic Apps, right, I don't have to manage my tokens. I can just point it and say, and Logic Apps is able to say, oh, hey, that requires OAuth, so you need you need creds to go with this, and this is where you put your creds in to Logic Apps.
Yeah, we have an authorization object that you would then put in your if it's OAuth, then you put your client ID and audience, et cetera, into those properties, and then we pass those along.
Okay, great. Yeah, that makes things a lot easier.
What about, Kevin, like one thing I'm thinking about too is around, could you speak to like the diagnostic side of this, like, or the monitoring aspects? We talked about kind of, we can put this in an ARM template, version it from a DevOps standpoint, but what about like from an alerting standpoint, does this plug into the same model that some other Azure services do, where we can kind of not just be able to monitor like the triggers and the steps and things that are happening, but can we export this like out to a storage account and some of those features that we have like with audit logs and some of that thing?
Absolutely. Well, there are two different things there. Audit logs is really helping you with the auditability of your resource, meaning you get to see the change log of how people are interacting with your resource. On the monitoring side, we integrate with the Azure monitoring so that you can do what's called shoebox internally. You can bring your own storage account and event hub, and once you configure that, we will emit data to those endpoints. So you can then look at telemetry based on the common model that the rest of Azure does.
Cool.
And so do I get and again I'm somebody in support, right? So nobody ever calls me when things work, right? So the logging sounds great, but do I get call stacks and that kind of stuff to help me understand maybe why my call into Dropbox is just failing miserably, or?
Well, what we do give you is let's say a particular run is failing.
Mm-hmm.
You can go click into your runs. You see in the Azure portal experience, there's the set of runs. You click on a run that failed, and we give you the same image that you have for your designer as a step through for what has occurred in that instance of a logic app. And then as you click on those actions, then you'll see all the detail for the inputs, outputs, and responses back from those service endpoints.
Oh, so it's like stepping through my code in essence, but I'm doing it visually at that point.
Exactly. Cool. So we record everything. So for every step, you see the inputs and outputs for every step, and all the return codes that's happened in that as well.
Hmm. Cool. Awesome.
So you don't have to add your own logging where he says, "Hey, save the input before I call some other endpoint because it'll get lost." We do all that for you.
Right. Okay. What's this is really cool. Like, what's and obviously, I'm sure you've got lots of internal and customers that you're working with that you can't share, but like, what's something that you've seen that's really cool that you can talk about that somebody's done with Logic Apps?
I can give you a couple of examples, and I'll be generic about the customers.
Okay.
We have a power company that needs to integrate with power exchange, exchanges across the country.
Uh-huh.
And so the power company goes ahead and they integrate with SharePoint server and the SharePoint server on premises. That's where their humans interact with different documents and lists. And they update, for example, what's the exchange rate for electricity depending on a certain day. So the business guys make those inputs. That gets sucked into the system. And then rates for how requests are coming in, they're looking at their velocity in terms of the energy they're producing, that goes then to these exchange companies. We have retail companies that are doing e-commerce through Logic Apps where they're doing message transformation because they have multiple vendors actually participating in that e-commerce system.
Right.
So you can imagine, I'll just take as an example, if you look at Amazon, for example, Amazon is not just Amazon, they have a lot of third-party guys participate in their web store, but they have their own systems that they're interacting with. So there's a lot of systems that are involved in any e-commerce type of interaction. And so Logic Apps is used to talk to all these disparate cloud-based services for doing payments and restocking, et cetera, for those systems. Another example would be an insurance company has a lot of older line of business systems which require, even though they have an API, a REST-based API that you can access, online. It was a very complicated API where you needed to call four or five other systems to construct the message that you really wanted to do in that single API call. And so now they're using Logic Apps as a proxy for those API requests, and then you can make a simple call, which then does all that gathering of, this is a user ID, but then I need to call system A to get the actual name and address for that guy to then put into the right fields. Where I really wanted to do is update my company information. So,
That's cool.
Yeah.
That brings up a question in my mind. So, like, especially thinking about the BizTalk world, things about like state. So, when people are designing solutions and using Logic Apps, if let's say they have a really complex, really long kind of running, that's for lack of a better term, but a really complicated workflow, and how should they design that such that, if I don't know how many minutes or maybe it takes to run this thing, but if it gets halfway through and something hiccups, obviously they can put exception logic and kind of things in there, but is there any kind of guarantees or anything they should be thinking about from like a state perspective that maybe they built up halfway through and then something happened? Can they count on some state to be there, or should they just assume that everything's gone if they threw an exception, or how should they kind of design their solution?
Sure. There are a couple of ways to answer your question. One is that Logic Apps is a long-running process, meaning that throughout any point of the system, no matter how many steps you have, we persist state throughout that process. So if something goes wrong and goes down, it'll continue where it left off. You don't have to do any extra modeling to enable that. Logic Apps also has built-in retry semantics for any endpoint that it needs to talk to. So then you don't have to worry about the one-off scenarios where my network went down and then the Logic App is locked in a weird state. So it will do that retry in the background. It's customizable, so you can go configure that retry policy. Also, you know, you can do your own compensation. So if the retries have you've exhausted your retries and now essentially that request has failed, you can make a decision about what to do at that point. It will actually stop where it's at, and we'll always keep that around. Or you can actually go in and kick off a different process to say, hey, this one has died. I need to go and compensate for that. That's happened. One of the things that we will be adding is the ability to do a resubmit, you know, based on the a running Logic App that's stopped. You can say, hey, I realize that something went wrong. I want to rerun this instance of a Logic App so that it can restart from the beginning.
Awesome.
Nice.
That's great.
Well, cool. Well, you know, Kevin, thank you very much for coming on. Kale, you got any additional questions for Kevin?
No, I think this was great, Kevin. Thanks again. Yeah, thanks for coming on. This is insightful, and I think our listeners will be able to take advantage of some of the stuff you shared here.
Great. It was a pleasure talking to you guys. And you know, if folks have questions, please reach out to our team. Logic Apps email. If you just want to send a direct email, and we're logicapps.io on Twitter, and we respond to our Twitter feed. So that's an easy way to go and reach out to us.
Cool. Great. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.